And that majestic sound means it's time for History Matters, This Week in History, with the man himself, Mr. Scott Washington. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Aaron. So glad to be here, and it's always good to hear that theme and to know that we're not in traffic on I-40.
Exactly,
right now.
Right? Yeah. For those of you who are stuck in traffic on I-40,
you're going to enjoy the show.
You are going to enjoy the next 20 minutes.
That's right.
Yeah,
stay
with us.
The time will fly by. Yep. That's right.
And then hang on to those cell phones, because when this is done, we'll give you a chance to call in and win some Chicago tickets, so it's all good.
That's great.
All right. So This Week in History, kind of momentous, because Monday was May Day, also International Workers Day. Today is, of course, Star Wars Day, so May the 4th be with you.
Oh, yeah.
And then Cinco de Mayo is tomorrow. So,
that's right.
Yeah.
So it's all numbers all the way.
Yeah.
And, sometimes people think that history is just that. It's just numbers and dates. And actually, it's the stories. It's the people. It's this intersection, or as I've said many times in Hillsborough, that crossroads of history and synchronicity. And you know this. When we read this, we go, isn't this incredible that if this hadn't happened, we wouldn't have had this.
Yeah, exactly.
And people meeting and unusual people that rise to the occasion that become very instrumental.
Yep.
Even people like Frederick Douglass, who the president lifted up at one point. But
so many people. We were talking about this before, and talking about his comment today about healthcare, like, make no mistake about it, this is a repeal and replace of Obamacare. It's like, yes, we're all familiar with the bill, dude. We know what it is. Someone said a while ago, and this is just, this is such an insightful comment, I think, that everything that Donald Trump says, the way he says it and what he says, sounds like a ninth grader who didn't do the reading and then got called on in class and just has to make something up. Like, oh, yes, Frederick Douglass, he's a great guy. And, you know, it's amazing that more people don't know about him, but I'll bet they're going to find out more in the future.
Andrew Jackson, too.
Character. But I do think he knows a little bit about Andrew Jackson, though, and maybe not when he died vis-a-vis the Civil War.
Right.
But I do think that and people haven't really noticed this. I've read a lot of historians talking about Trump's comments on Andrew Jackson and trying to make sense of it all. That debate in the early 19th century was between Andrew Jackson on the one side and Henry Clay on the other. Henry Clay was the leader of the anti-Jacksonian opposition, sort of the founding figure of the Whig Party. And Henry Clay was sort of more progressive when it came to, and you know, by mid-1800 standards, more progressive on racial issues and Indian resettlement than Andrew Jackson was. And also sort of the figure who was more of a nationalist in the sense of infrastructure and big developments and developing a national economy and using the federal government to promote it all. And Clay never became president, but one of his most fervent disciples did, Abraham Lincoln, starts out as a Clay disciple and then becomes president. And Clay is the opponent of Andrew Jackson. Fast forward 150 years, Barack Obama walks around with Team of Rivals, the book about Lincoln's presidency, and really consciously tries to model himself after Lincoln. So, of course, you have Donald Trump as the anti-Obama modeling himself after Andrew Jackson and all that that entails, which means populism, very salt of the earth kind of guy, but also a very, very rich man himself whose policies tend to benefit the wealthy, but still has that sort of hard Scrabble anti-elite approach. I think him quoting Andrew Jackson is actually, he's actually got something there that people didn't catch.
Well, and I appreciate you even bringing up Lincoln, because this week in history, I even stumbled across a really fascinating fact that back in 1991, geneticists at Johns Hopkins University were given permission to clone Abraham Lincoln's genes.
Oh, wow. They cloned Lincoln's brain.
That's a little far afield from what you're talking about, which is so important, but it just happened to...
No, I did not know that either, and that's... I was not aware that they had done that, I've not heard progress reports on that yet. Right?
So.
What happened with it? Do they have just a whole bunch of, Is there a room or a building in Johns Hopkins where there's an entire room full of surly 16-year-olds who are all gangly and tall and wondering what to do with their lives?
We got his nose.
I'll never save the country if I can't get a girlfriend.
It's things like this. That's right. Woody Allen, where are you? Yes. Yeah, so this
shows
you
that. So they cloned Lincoln's genes.
That's
so,
right.
Yeah.
And that's a reference to a Woody Allen movie. But
yes.
But there is this element of history that I think is so important that we hear references that come up, and then they actually. They are worth thinking about. Mm-hmm. They are worth considering. Not just the fact that Andrew Jackson is on the $20 bill.
Right.
But he was battle-tested. He was down the Battle of New Orleans, which was after the War of 1812. Mm-hmm. But it was a decisive victory. Yeah.
And I think actually going along with that, like going back to like the Jackson-Clay debate being picked up and dropped in Obama versus Trump, I don't think it's a coincidence that it's under the Obama presidency, Obama styling himself after Lincoln, who's the pro-Clay anti-Jackson, that's the president that says, let's take Andrew Jackson off the $20 bill. I don't think that's a coincidence either.
So you see how much you're just tuning in thinking, what are we going to do? And my gosh, you're getting a whole... This is how the sweep of history is. It's so exciting.
See, if you weren't stuck in traffic on I-40 right now, you'd be home. You'd probably be, you know, sort of enjoying and taking your mind off the day, but you wouldn't be listening to this.
That's right. And you know, the fascinating thing, Aaron, is we know that sometimes when people say, oh, history doesn't matter, and yet we stand on the shoulders of history all the time. I thought of two things that came up on Monday. You know, the first adhesive postage stamp from Great Britain was issued in 1840. Also the first U.S. postcard in 1873 by the U.S. government. Now, these are things we take for granted, not realize that there was a time when they weren't there.
Yeah.
And that's another thing that we kind of recognize.
And what did they do about postage before postage stamps? How did people pay for the mail? I honestly have no idea.
This is a good question, and I'm sure people are just scrambling to the computer to look up this question. And that's part of the issue of good things of history is that they lead to more questions. So if you have curiosity, this is a great field to be kind of to keep following up because it is really interesting. That's a really good question.
Yeah,
I'm sure they did pay for it.
It had to have paid for it somehow. This is like you think about things that we absolutely take for granted today, like postage stamps and things. The act of using a stamp to pay for postage that just didn't exist until 1840 in Great Britain when they come up with that idea of putting a stamp on.
It might have been a rubber stamp.
It could be. Yeah.
Check this out. See, another thing to find out about.
Yeah. I teach American government at Durham Tech, and we're getting to the end of the semester, so I asked the students, what questions do you have for me? What outstanding questions do you still have about American government? And someone asked about immigration policy, and I'm writing this long 4-paragraph answer like I do. I just read Strangers in the Land.
And you're a very good writer, by the way.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
I hope my students agree. Because they got 4 paragraphs in response to a simple question about immigration. But like John Higham's book, Strangers in the Land, I read fairly recently, and he talks about prior to the 1880s, there was no immigration policy at all. It was totally open door. People just came in, and there wasn't any monitoring of it. Nowadays, we think about a totally open-door policy.
Right.
It's completely ridiculous. No one would ever consider something like that. But for the first 100 years of American history, not only was that what it was, but no one ever thought anything different.
Yeah, and that's really important to think about, is realize that this issue of immigration is more recent.
Oh, yeah.
And that we need to give that some leeway and think about our larger history, which is why history matters.
Mystery matters. And we keep rehashing the same immigration debate over and over again for decades. So,
that's right. And yet we are so dependent on people coming in from different places. For instance, I found an interesting item, May 2nd, 1872, Carl Nessler, a German-born, now remember, German-born, now he's an immigrant, American beautician, invented the permanent wave and false eyelashes.
So he's the one.
Those immigrants, those people. Yeah. But, that just shows you that people, even though we make fun of it, but it has changed lives.
Yep.
Especially if you look at some of the hairdos of the 1960s.
yep.
That was very
important.
But
I guarantee you he faced discrimination and harassment because, you're born in 1872, which means you're German-born and sort of active in the prime of your life in the 1910s when you had the Red Scare and World War One and the sort of anti-German sentiment. And, they called sauerkraut liberty cabbage for 2 years.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Oh, well, even Italian-Americans faced that kind of heavy discrimination at the turn of the 20th century.
Yep.
And, in fact, I knew a family where the father, he was born in Italy, but his name was Constablion. He changed it to Constable. He was married to a German. He passed himself off as German. World War II came along. His sons, who never knew this, went to enlist. The special services said, we can't find any record. They had to go back, and finally the truth came out. Well, he came
that
born
he was
northern,
Italy the whole time.
Something totally different to them.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. So it just shows you that there is both sometimes things that happen when you come from other countries. You want to fit in. You want to be just safe. You
know, yep.
That's so many people pouring out of many war-torn countries around the world. These are not terrorists. They're not revolutionaries. They're just people who want to live life like everybody else.
Yep. Speaking with Scott Washington, History Matters this week in history. We've barely scratched the surface.
Yes,
we've been talking about all these other cool things. What else went on this week?
Well, of course, we do have, we mentioned May Day, and I think that's
right.
Been for centuries. It was a typical time right at springtime when people would celebrate all across the world. So that is not necessarily new, but it's something that's noteworthy. There are some other things that came up this week. One that has a definite Carolina connection. Well, let me tell you. Here's one. If you ever enjoyed a piano music, I found this interesting fact. For May 4th, 1655, a fellow is born in Italy, Bartolomeo Cristofori. He's an Italian harpsichord maker, and he's actually credited with inventing the modern piano.
Ooh, okay.
So that's kind of important.
So he's the one.
That's right.
Yeah.
Now, anybody who plays hammer dulcimer, they've already eliminated the front part and just went to the strings themselves.
Right, right.
But, you know, that's a kind of an important thing when we realize how much pianos are part of the cultural and musical scene.
Yeah.
In our
all right, and then a lot of other things happened on May 4th as well. You had the first the Freedom Rides launched in 1961.
Yes.
The Kent State massacre in 1970.
Oh my gosh!
Which,
yes. Oh.
Yeah. Again, you think about the clashes between protesters and police and protesters and counter-protesters.
Yes.
On the streets today, and you've got people who, again, who have completely forgotten history, who say things like, oh, race relations have never been worse in America than they are today, which is ridiculous, or free speech has never been more under assault.
Yeah.
Than it is today, which equally ends, like, clashes between protesters and police. Like, it's gotten horrible. It's never been this bad in American history, but it's,
yes,
it's close to the point where you can say it's never been this good in American history, because you go back,
right,
and you find, and Kent State is just one example literally deadly clashes, which,
that's right,
fortunately, we've been able to avoid for the most part.
Well, wasn't it great to see there in January the people pouring out in the streets,
mm-hmm,
in protest the day after the inauguration?
Peacefully, yeah.
Peacefully,
yep.
And raising their voice. And that's what it's all about. And I think that we want that right to continue. Because we all, at times, want to say no. And
yeah.
We want to be able to do that peacefully and to register our opposition to something. And remember, this freedom of speech and the right to assembly, petition, these basic essential rights really also protect a minority of voices, too.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you have the majority that votes someone into power, there's that minority that might say, or at least didn't win, that would say, wait a minute,
yep,
we have views, and there we have a different thing to contribute to this conversation, which,
yeah,
I think is very important.
And that's, I think especially that's when it's on you. If you are the minority, if you are the majority,
yes,
then it is especially on you to care about freedom of speech.
That's,
and,
right,
and not just say, oh, I care about freedom of speech, but to actually protect the rights of minorities.
Well, and knowing that, you know, here in Hillsboro,
mm-hmm,
is where a constitutional convention's held in 1788,
yep,
that proves pivotal to why Americans have those essential liberties, because they voted to postpone ratifying the Constitution until provisions were made for introducing a Bill of Rights,
yeah,
to Congress in the ratifying states. That's extraordinary. No other state did that, and North Carolina,
yeah,
did.
So let's actually end with that, because we got to wrap up,
okay,
in a second.
Great.
Because we talk about the Bill of Rights as being the first 10 amendments to the Constitution. The Bill of Rights are, in fact, the first 10 amendments and Amendment Number 27,
oh, yes,
which got ratified in 1992.
That's right. And it was first proposed in 1789. Back in that day when North Carolina took its principled stance, 12 amendments are passed by Congress. They're sent out to the states for ratification. It makes its rounds. 10 of those 12 get enough votes for ratification.
Mm-hmm.
One of them had to do with representation. It's kind of a moot point. The other one sat there, and it was about pay. It was basically simply saying that Congress cannot raise its own pay until it's faced another election.
Yep.
So it sat there calmly until 1992, when a University of Texas graduate student doing a report and said, you know, this looks like it may still be open. The professor just gives him a C, said, no, that's ridiculous. He goes and continues to follow this up. Supreme Court rules, well, actually, no, there is no time limit.
Yeah.
He takes it out to the states, and it becomes the 27th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. Isn't that just wildly great
history?
One
person doing a report in grad school makes a huge difference.
And, you know, that says so much about history, too, and we know this. One person can make a difference. So if you're a listener out there and you think, oh, what can I do? It's just too many people. You can. You can make a difference in your neighborhood, in your community, and sometimes in your nation.
It is 5:50 here at WCHL. Scott Washington, History Matters. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Eric.